following is a presentation of the Chicago Bears Network and ChicagoBears.com. Download the Chicago Bears official mobile app for up-to-the-minute Bears content every day. And now, welcome to Bears All Access, your all-access pass into Chicago Bears football. Bears All Access is brought to you by IGS Energy and sponsored by CDW, Miller Lite, and Comcast.
It's a new era here at Halas Hall. Time for Bears All Access, brought to you by IGS Energy. Alongside 85 Bear Tom Thayer, I'm Zach Zaidman. Pleased to be joined for the first time on the program by Bears cornerback Prince Amukamara. And life has changed. You know, after the first four games, there were some ups and downs, and the Bears have decided to make a change. It's the Mitchell Trubisky era. And in talking to some of the offensive players, I think you can sense that there's a reset button that's been hit. Do you feel that way as a defensive player?
Not yet. It was different, though, seeing Mike with doing scout team reps today. But other than that, not yet. I think we'll get a sense as a defense on game day. But, yeah, just kind of funky because, like, we elected Mike G as captain. So it's like, is he still captain and stuff like that, which I'm sure being a captain is in him. But now since Trubisky is our starting quarterback now, I just wonder if that's how he's viewed now as a captain. And I think he has all those qualities too. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. But most importantly, we just need to get this thing turned around and just hope we start.
You know, the one thing good about Mike Glennon is he's had this experience before in his football life, and he's handled it like a professional. So if you're thinking, is this guy still worthy of being captain, I think he is.
Right.
Because he sends a real positive message in the locker room, and that's kind of what captains are, Prince. You know, it's the guys that if you have difficult moments in socially or whatever, this guy can step up to the plate, answer questions credibly for young players, and still go out in the field and be professional.
Right, and completely agree. I think he's gonna be helping Mitchell same as Mark. Mark's been great for both of them, and like you said, he did experience it back in Tampa Bay with Jameis, and I know he's gonna be ready if anything happens.
Do you remember your first start?
First start.
In the NFL.
Yes, yeah, I do.
What was it like? Who was it against?
Right. So I probably missed over half of the year with the broken foot. And then the first game I come back, it's against DeSean Jackson. And I think Vince Young was at quarterback. So I had came in, and DeSean, he noticed, okay, there's a rookie out here. And he started learning something to Vince. And I'm thinking, these guys are about to take me deep. So I boarded all coverage and just bailed and just ran deep. And first play, they threw me a pick. Vince threw me a pick, and I thought I was gonna have a great year after that. But then experienced some adversity. But yeah, it was a great first game.
You know, I'm surprised when you read your bio, you went to Nebraska. And probably every crowd that you play at in the NFL is smaller than the crowds you played at in Nebraska. And do you remember your first opportunity to play at that level? And that, because as much as we talk about professional football, in Nebraska is as big as you get.
Right. It's so funny. I didn't know how big Nebraska was until I left Nebraska, just because I was always it was the only college I've really ever been to, only college football game. And I didn't really fathom how I was being treated and how the fans were until after I left. And now looking in, it's like, whoa, being at Nebraska, being great at Nebraska was a big deal. And yeah, it fascinates me.
But why a corner going to Nebraska? Because, you know, back in my generation, it's about all the front seven, front eight, right, and offense and defensively speaking. But now here you are, you have a successful NFL career, and you're a corner out of Nebraska. How did that choice come about?
Yeah, so I was actually recruited as a running back.
Yeah, I saw your stats. Impressive.
Going to Nebraska. And me and my best friend, who's also from Arizona, we both got recruited. Long story short, we got the same offers, and we're going to choose It was going to be like a buddy deal, one for all for one. And and he got on his visit, he had a little too much fun, and then had a meeting with the head coach the next day. And the head coach, Callahan, asked him, so, hey, what are your thoughts about Nebraska? He said, it's a 10 out of 10. He said, well, why don't you commit? I'll commit. And I was like, ah, oh, when he told me that, I was like, all right, looks like I'm going here. But, yeah, as soon as I got to Nebraska, at first they were telling me, hey, we want you to be our running back, la-da-da-da. And then when I committed, they threw me in the defensive room. And I was like, whoa, what's happening? And I wanted to get out, and Coach Pelini – end up coming in and said, "Hey, you could switch to run. You could switch to DB, but you could switch to running back. But I think you'll make a lot of money playing DB. I've seen a lot of cornerbacks. I don't know if he's blown smoke, but I said okay, and I stuck it out. And
were you good? Right. Were you a good running back?
I believe, probably not, because they let me try it out, and I just kept running into the back of the guards' backs. And stuff like that, and you're not supposed to do that. And so probably not, but I'm glad that I made the switch. I think my longevity is better at DB.
Your first interception that you just described, how well did you return it?
Not well. As soon as I caught it, Deshaun tackled me right then and there.
Hey, listen, he got the ball back. Right. I mean, that's what you're looking for.
But, you know, you see a lot of these defensive players, man, they get the ball in their hands and they immediately go back to their high school offensive days when they were great running backs and things.
You saw, was it Bobby Wagner who had an interception last weekend? And then all of a sudden he starts dancing and you see these running back moves. Lance Briggs, who used to be with the Bears, was a former running back. There's a big primetime game in Dallas. He got the ball on a takeaway. And then all of a sudden you saw him turn into Walter Payton on the way to the end zone. Pretty impressive.
Right. I think that's the neat thing about it, is because if you look at every linebacker and every defensive back and you look at their stats, a lot of them have running back stats associated to their upbringing. And then it's that decision, like you're saying, you know, you look at yourself as being the next great running back out of Nebraska, and then they said, hey, welcome to the DB room.
Right.
Yeah. It's an obstacle to overcome because you're a young guy and you still have something set in your mind, but a coach knows a little bit better and more profitable for you.
Exactly. And I think, yeah, that's where the trust has to come. You got to trust in what the coach has seen and what he sees.
So give Bo Pelini a lot of credit. He told you end up making money as a professional playing defensive back, and that's what you've been doing as an NFL player. But the reason I asked you about your first start and going through that is, did you sleep the night before the game? Because these are all the things that I guess Mitchell Trubisky's now going to go through. And obviously you practiced the week leading into it, so you knew ahead of time that you were going to end up playing. It wasn't one of those things where someone got hurt and bam, you had to go in there like Tom during the beginning of his Bears career. But I think that knowing that there's a little bit of pressure associated with that, right?
Right, right. I would say that there's a little bit of anxiety, but I think it's just good nervousness and just excitement, just ready to go out. I mean, ever since preseason, I've just seen Mitch on the sideline, just always dialed in and just always ready for his number to be called. So I think he'll be ready, and I think he's going to shock a lot of people.
You know, the unique thing about it is you guys both kind of play island position. Quarterback's on an island, offensively speaking, and a cornerback is on an island, defensively speaking. And I think that's one of the unique things for a guy. You talk about the anticipation of your first start. It's nice to have that little bit of knowledge that you're going to do it instead of it just thrust upon you. So I'm sure it helped you as a rookie, and it'll help Mitch this opportunity.
100%.
You said shock a lot of people. I'm interested in finding out how. We'll discuss next with Prince Amukamara, the new Bears cornerback. Tom Thayer is here. I'm Zach Sabin. This is Bears All Access on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Download the official Bears mobile app brought to you by Verizon and get your game face on with a new virtual face paint feature. Hi, everyone. It's Bears All Access brought to you by IGS Energy from the PNC Center here at Halas Hall. Alongside Tom Thayer, I'm Zach Sabin, joined by Bears cornerback Prince Amukamara on the show. And before the break, you mentioned in talking about Mitchell Trubisky that he's going to shock some people. And my guess is that you're saying that because of the extra dimension that he brings to the field, that mobility, that elite level athleticism that you don't find many quarterbacks have in this league.
Exactly. Yeah, I would say definitely his mobility and his ability to extend plays. And to be honest, he just has this cool, calm demeanor about him that that you don't see in a lot of rookie quarterbacks. But mind you, I haven't seen him play in his first real game. I've only seen him play in preseason and in practice. But even just how he talks, he's very competitive. Just how he talks stuff off the field. Like I don't know if you know, but it's rumors that he's a pretty good basketball player and stuff like that. And just how I always challenge him, and just how he gives it to me back. He has some type of I think Cruz said this about him, some type of moxie about him. So it's gonna be good to see.
But you've played more against him in the last 4 weeks than anybody else has, because he did play demonstration squad. And Do you see the change in his game since when he got here, throughout OTAs and throughout training camp and everything? Is he a different Mitchell Trubisky at an NFL level quarterback than when he came in as a kind of an inexperienced college quarterback?
Yeah, I would say in OTAs, I would say he probably just started out a little slower in OTAs. I don't know if that had to do with confidence or just knowing the playbook. But then when we came back in training camp, it was just conversations amongst our DBs like, "Whoa, this is a new Mitch," and he's just been improving from that point on.
Yeah, watching him from the first day of OTAs to the last day of training camp, it looks like he went through his entire senior year in college. Right. And that was impressive to me because of the things he had to overcome about the way you see college offenses now. You don't huddle, a lot of shotgun and everything. Right. So the mountain he's been able to climb to get to this position, it's been an impressive adventure for him.
Exactly.
I think the thing that stands out is anyone who is able to watch practice out at Hallis, this guy is usually the last guy off the field. Once practice ends, he stays there for a long period of time working on all the things that he probably wasn't happy with over the course of the actual practice. So he's put in the work. It's not an accident that he's ascended. And I think he said this right at the start of the season when he was elevated to the number two position. He said that he probably moved up faster than the Bears expected because of the work he put in.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. I know he stays out after, and he asked the receiver to stay out just so he could throw routes. But I didn't know that. I didn't know that last part.
It's something how many things he has to work on, because they talk about the importance of his footwork and how efficiently it has to really be the quarterback he's going to be capable of being. And does that factor into young cornerbacks? Like, is there something specifically that you'd stay after practice and have to work on, or is it more repetitiously done with receivers in your face? And it's because it's different, the things a quarterback can work on after practice and then what a cornerback can work on after practice.
Right. I would say a cornerback, you would just need more live looks. So if you want to work on your press footwork, you would need either your DB or a receiver just to give you some quick moves off the line, or if you want to work on your hands and just breaking on balls. I think that's something else that you could work on. But I would say just to get those live looks and that live speed, you do need another player.
I think the thing that impresses me the most about you early on in your career, and you kind of hinted at this a little bit, before you even had an opportunity to learn the NFL game, you had to overcome injury, because that hit you before your opportunity to play. And from everyone that I've ever talked to about rehab, you're on your own. And I know that's what they say about cornerbacks on the field, but that had to have been tough, trying to learn the game while trying to get healthy.
Exactly. And not only that, is that my teammates didn't really know anything about me because it was a lockout. So the first time seeing all of them was like the first day of training camp, and then I got hurt the first day of training camp. So now it's just trying to build that chemistry and camaraderie with these grown men that I've never ever met before, and that was a little bit of a struggle too.
But expectations of that position when you come into an organization like the Giants, I think league wide, you are a promoted guy, because first of all, your name is Prince, right. And it's going, wow, this, then when they get an opportunity to see you play, it kind of changes what they think about you. Because I think coming out of training camp, I think you had the best training camp of all the DBs that were out there. And it was nice because Kyle Fuller had a good training camp.
Right.
Marcus Cooper played well, even though he was injured a little bit. Quentin Demps helped out a little bit. So that kind of goes along with the position you play, as you bring the pressure is always going to be thrust upon you.
Very, very true. And then, and with that pressure, you have to have short-term memory just because things aren't going to always go the way you expected. So that's another part, too.
What was it like early on in your career when the locker room that you walked into was one of the best defensive teams in the entire league, and a team that every single year was expected to win a championship?
Right. I would say competition was just always at its highest, and every day. And it was great to just to have the vets that I had, like Corey Webster, Aaron Ross, Antrell Roll, who was here, and Terrell Thomas. I think just to have those guys actually as big brothers to groom me and show me the ins and outs of the NFL and just what it looks like to be a pro on and off the field helped me a lot.
Now, early in your career, you talked about how you were giving it to Trubisky a little bit and he's not afraid to give it back. Were you a quiet rookie or were you the type of guy that would yap back?
Yeah, I was the type of guy that would yap back. I was pretty insubordinate earlier in my career. I mean, guys would ask me to. As a rookie, like these vets, they don't care if you think you're humble already. They're gonna make sure they put you through their own humble test, meaning you have to go get the Popeyes, you have to fill up the room with sunflower seeds, food, or whatever. And so you just have to put your pride aside sometimes, and that wasn't always the case with me. So, and there was consequences if you didn't do it.
What's the worst thing that happened that you can share on the radio?
I mean, one thing that was pretty big was the whole cold tub incident. But another thing that was pretty funny was that I didn't bring the Popeyes, and then. And they didn't say anything. And then I came back, and we always travel suit and tie. And then the sleeves of my button-up shirt was cut off, and my tie was cut off. In half. Yeah.
So you look like Barney Rubble, Fred Flintstone. Yeah.
Exactly.
You played with Michael Strahan, right?
No.
Oh, missed him?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say, do you get a chance when you see a person like that whose popularity has grown into what it's become? Do you notice that type of things in that locker room? And do you see, who's got the personalities in the Bears locker room that you could see, popping or having a bright future in that way? Kyle Long, it's hard to get by him.
Yeah, Kyle's one of them, besides me and Kyle. Kyle's one of them. Josh Bellamy.
Yeah.
Josh Bellamy, yes. Goodness.
Joshua.
Joshua Bellamy is yeah, he's a character. Akeem has that about him, and then
Willie is funny, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He's
good guy in the locker room.
He's pretty unfiltered.
He'll let you know how he feels. Yeah, it is a locker room that when you start to look at the different areas of the locker room, the different position groups, there are some personalities.
Yeah,
there.
I mean, looking at the locker room now, I couldn't imagine when they had Martellus, Forte, Marshall, Jay, and that'll be tough. It seemed like just to control. I've heard stories too, though. So it's
I can share some stories with you.
Briggs, Tillman, Urlacher, that whole crew on the defensive side of the ball. There was enough competitiveness between offense and defense, and then you kind of had Olin Kreutz that was ruling school inside the locker room.
It's interesting because the quarterback that you had during your entire time in New York was Eli Manning, who seems like the opposite of all the different characters you just described.
He'll surprise a lot of people. He'll surprise a lot of people. Yeah, he's a big prankster himself.
One of the things that I'm really impressed with is, and you can hear it when you talk, it is clear that over the course of your entire life, you have valued education as much as football. And I want to talk about that balance coming up next with Prince Amukamara, our guest on Bears All Access, brought to you by IGS Energy on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Text the keyword BEARS to 737737 or visit chicagobears.com/Dr. Pepper to enter the Dr. Pepper sweepstakes, your chance to win VIP experiences and game tickets. Dr. Pepper, the official soft drink of the Chicago Bears. It's Bears All Access brought to you by IGS Energy on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. 85 champion Tom Thayer is here. I'm Zach Saveman. Another Super Bowl champion is with us, former New York Giant turned Bear, Prince Amukamara. What's it like winning a championship? I mean, you guys have experienced it. It's why you play the game. After you take care of yourself financially, the biggest thing that you're looking for is to win a championship. What's that like?
Let me answer it.
Yeah. Well, I think New York on Prince's stage was probably bigger than ours was back in that day.
Yeah, but arguably you played, Tom, for the greatest Super Bowl era team in the history of the National Football League.
But the fanfare paid attention to is bigger in Prince's era than it is mine, and I have evidence of it after we hear Prince's story.
Man, it was just that whole season was a whirlwind. I mean, winning the division, 9-7, and just the wins we had. Like, there was a notable win in Dallas. It was the first time we were playing Dallas. It was in Dallas, and they were going to win, and JPP comes off the edge, blocks the field goal, and that, from that point on, that changed our whole season. And then Cruz with the salsa dance, Cruz is coming on scene. He wasn't even supposed to be a starter. He was an undrafted guy who was hurt the year before and coming into his second year. And then, in just the Super Bowl, I mean, playing the Patriots again and in Eli's brother's stadium and then winning by Hail Mary. It was just so much emotion. I wasn't ready for and I mean, even looking back at that now, I feel like I took that opportunity for granted, because I mean, I haven't been back to a playoff since then. And it's crazy even in the playoffs, because you think, like, preseason, if you're a rookie, you think preseason is pretty fast, but then the season is faster than the preseason, and then playoffs is actually faster than the regular season. And the Super Bowl, just a whole nother speed. It's just like guys just keep turning it up. So you get everybody's best, and then you get the parade after, actually the day after, and it's in New York City. Everyone shuts down and throws confettis from the window and stuff like that. Yeah, it's definitely memorable.
It's, well, both playing New England. It's, you know, it's different for us, is because I was, you know, back when we videoed the Super Bowl as a team, we were still using reel-to-reel tape. And so a couple months ago, we put on the reel-to-reel tape. I have a copy of the reel-to-reel tape, and we were watching. And then when the Super Bowl was over in our era, that was it. Just both teams went to their locker room, and you got dressed and you went home. Nowadays, and throughout your era, they bring a big stage up. They drop all this confetti down. They have all these cameras that are filming the fulfillment of the accomplishment of all the players and coaches and organization and everything. And it was sad, because when you watched the end of our Super Bowl, and we had such as 46-10.
That was a Super Bowl score?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, the sad thing about it is
and it was a come-from-behind win, mind you. The Patriots scored first in that game.
Right, because
then
we fumbled on the 10-yard line. They kicked a field goal out of it. Sorry for us. But at the end of that game, because Walter Payton didn't score a touchdown, the media didn't care about him, and he just walked in the locker room by himself with not one member of the media following the greatest running back in the history of the National Football League. So it is different. And, you know, when you play a Super Bowl in 85, it's kind of hard to watch, because you envy the moments that these players are going through, you know. And that's why now you're an active player. Getting back to the Super Bowl, you'd probably appreciate it more,
right?
Because you've had the experience as a young guy for the Super Bowl.
Exactly, yeah. And I mean, and just hearing stuff like Tony Gonzalez, I don't know if he hasn't won. I know he hasn't won a Super Bowl. I don't know if he's been to no playoffs either.
No, he's been to the playoffs.
He's been to the playoffs. Okay, but
Atlanta though, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
But hasn't won a Super Bowl and stuff like that. And I mean, there's a lot of great players that haven't reached the highest point in their career, which is Super Bowl, and that's tough.
You know, hearing you say that, I was watching recently one of the new Football Lifes on NFL Network about Dan Marino. And you know, he talked about there's nothing like being able to walk off the final NFL Sunday as a champion.
Wow.
And you guys have both experienced that. And, you know, early on in his career, that first year he was able to play in a Super Bowl, didn't win it, lost big to the 49ers, and thought, you know, you're going to be back at some point, and it never happened.
So, that would be the point that I would tell players, don't think this is ultimately going to happen again.
Exactly.
Because we were the youngest team in the National Football League, and we had the best record in the league the next 3 years, and we never went back to the Super Bowl. So it kind of shows you how difficult it is. But to have the experience of getting there at least once, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Once you play under the pressure of the playoffs leading up to a Super Bowl, playing in the biggest pressure cooker in the world, the Super Bowl, and then winning it, do you ever feel pressure again as an NFL player?
Yeah, I think I still do. I would say just because I know other guys are getting better, and I know I'm gonna have a tough assignment ahead of me the next day. Probably not the same pressure, but I would say it's still pressure. I mean, after following, there was a game where I shadowed Megatron every play, and then the next game we went and played somebody else who wasn't as good as Megatron, and there was still pressure just to perform, but it wasn't the nights weren't as sleepless as it was when I was going to play Megatron.
You know, we saw Megatron twice a year, 6'6" plus, bigger than life, unbelievable catch radius. But then 2 weeks ago, you played against Antonio Bryant. Who's more difficult? Is it size, or is it a guy that is so fluid as Antonio Brown?
I would say a guy the size of Megatron. Yeah, yeah. Just because I just feel like, I think it's a pride thing. I just feel like if I'm taller than you, then I shouldn't be too bad. But of course, that's not always the case. I mean, look at, like you said, Antonio Brown, and then look at Odell. A lot of those small receivers do have that knack about them.
I think it's, I mean, there's so many talented receivers in the NFL now. And you just, the division that you came from, the NFC East, you know, with when you were with Jacksonville, you know, briefly, I mean, think about all the top receivers that you faced, and it doesn't change now. How do you, and they all have different things that you kind of have to prepare for. Do you have like a little book that, are you a big note taker where you have your particular scouting report on each guy?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there's also a mental memory also, just knowing what did this guy do to beat you, and you just have that in your memory. But yeah, thank goodness for the iCloud and stuff like that. Everything that I have just transferred from phone to phone in my notes, so I do have them.
So do you like the technology of today? Like I said before, when I first came in the league, we had reel-to-reel, and we probably didn't have access to it for 30 hours. So now you come in, you take a shower, you get on the bus, and it's already on your tablet.
Yeah, it's very useful, very easy. I mean, even just sitting down after a play in a game, you could you can't actually watch the film yet. I think they're getting there, but you can just watch pictures and see if you're in position, out of position.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, more with Prince Amukamara, the Bears cornerback, on Bears All Access, brought to you by IGS Energy on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Former Bears Spice Adams, Alex Brown, and Lance Briggs team up twice a month for the most hilarious Bears podcast out there, and they bring some football knowledge too. Check out Two Guys and a Pro Bowler on iTunes, the official Bears app, ChicagoBears.com, or on YouTube. I feel like we've got a pretty good guy to talk to here, part of the current Bears, talking about defensive back Prince Amukamara, our guest here on Bears All Access, brought to you by IGS Energy here on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Zach Sabin, Tom Thayer with you. It is clear, and I said this earlier, just from listening to you, that there was a heavy value placed on education from the time that you were very young. Am I right?
Yeah, you're 100% correct. I mean, going to Nebraska, I mean, my dad said, hey, you're going to major something that had to do with being a teacher, a doctor, or a lawyer. So then I said political. So I went and started majoring in political science. And then Mel Kiper, after my junior year, had five picks. Mel Kiper said, okay, this guy's good enough to be in the NFL. And then I switched my major to sociology without telling my dad. But I still
– Wait, are you just to make life a little bit easier?
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, with poli-sci, you have to take, like, math and science and all this stuff. It was just – I didn't think it was for me, especially believing in Mel Kiper's mock draft. And then, yeah, so then I went to sociology and then graduated in 3.5. And that was it's crazy. I didn't think that getting a college degree was as big as a deal as it was or even now, just because I haven't used it. But as I gotten older, I've been able to appreciate it a lot more, just because a lot of people haven't finished. So just because I had the opportunity to finish, I'm thankful I was able to do that.
That's the neatest thing about having the opportunity to go to college, right, and accomplishing the degree, because you're not measured by your weight room strength. You're not measured, exactly, by your 40 time. And then you see the rest of the student body, how much it means to them, to their class schedule, and, you know, just accomplishing the goals they're looking for. It's something, because I think people don't realize how much time we spend in meetings, right, at practice, at, you know, pre-practice and the weightlifting, everything throughout the off season. So, but the accomplishment of the degree is awesome, a feeling.
Very true. And because we have all that, we're not able to take some of those classes, just, right, because meetings and weight room has to take precedence over that, because that's kind of why we're there.
Yeah, you're restricted somewhat in terms of from a time standpoint, right, in terms of what you can take. But I don't think you can be a successful football player at this level without being smart.
True.
Can't make mistakes.
Yeah.
It gets you cut.
Yeah, see, that's – and I bring that up because – and you mentioned poli sci. Is it difficult when – you have, and we're finding this out, it's a crazy world that we live in today, but everyone's got opinions, right, on what's going on in the world. And I think sometimes, you know, you hear people say that when they refer to NFL players, as though everyone thinks the same way, and you forget it's just like real life. There are a lot of different opinions in the locker room. I mean, you saw it before you guys beat the Pittsburgh Steelers at Soldier Field. They clearly had a difficult time coming to grips with what the president had said and operating as one.
Right,
and
right.
You saw it even after the loss. They were talking about it all throughout the week. In the locker room, how do you guys become one when everyone's got a different opinion on what's going on?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And it's funny because I'm always with the offensive linemen. So offensive linemen are like known as like big white guys, big country. Sorry. Well, when I think of offensive linemen, the people that come to my head is like Josh Sitton and Kyle Long,
right,
and stuff like that.
Tell to Bobby Massey and Chuck Leno.
Exactly.
Hey,
yeah. Right. And I'm with Chuck too. But yeah, I think because we have one common goal, and that's to win the world championship. I think that's what brings us together. Because no matter our backgrounds, no matter what, we're all working towards this one goal, and so we're all working towards that together. But yeah, I mean, from kneeling, from even in Jacksonville, when the whole presidential election was going on, I mean, even like Hillary Trump, even like guys were talking about that. But what's great is that we can talk about it, and then okay, strap it on helmet, and then talk to each other, like, hey, do we got cover two or whatever, and we're able to just put that aside and then go work together. And I think that's what's beautiful about an NFL locker room, is that we could set aside our differences and then work towards a common goal.
How was the transition for you, Ben, from the Giants to Jacksonville to Chicago? Are you a person that takes a little bit time to get to know everybody, or are you kind of an extroverted guy that has a good time going out there and meeting your new teammates?
Yeah, going from New York to Jacksonville, it was kind of surreal, just because I was in New York for 5 years, so I'm thinking, well, I'm going to be here my whole career, and that wasn't always the case. So then going to Jacksonville was weird at first, just being in a new city and being in a new uniform. However, I think I'm an extrovert. It was very easy to fit, and I think the locker rooms are pretty much the same. You have the same types of guys. And then coming in here, it's funny, Benny Cunningham said, he asked guys like, hey, has this guy, how many years has Prince been here? Because it seems like he's been here 3 or 4 years. And he said that because, like, as soon as I got here, Akeem started making jokes on me, and I was shooting jokes back and stuff like that. And that was just, that's like our quote-unquote love language. I mean, that's just how we greet each other and stuff.
I mean, Akeem Hicks earlier this season called Tariq Cohen 4'9".
Wow.
So that gives you an idea of the kind of thing. And that's something we can say on the radio. Who knows what gets said behind closed doors when we're not in there or the guys aren't at the podium. But that's, I always think, and this is what's fascinating about sports. Sports has always been ahead of society in terms of being able to blend a mosaic of cultures together for a common goal, because everyone understands what's at stake, and that is the opportunity to win. And you put that above all else. And you wonder if the rest of society can learn from the sports world. I mean, you go back to 1947 when Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier in Major League Baseball. Sports has always been ahead of society, and you'd like to think, especially during this time where there's so much strife between a variety of different people, that they can look to the NFL during these times. For as much as the league's been criticized, there's a lot that you can get from it and learn from.
Right. And I think what's different between, like, the nation and, like, sports team is that in the nation, I think everyone has a different idea of what the common goal is. So everyone is probably working towards something different, but in on sports team, everyone's like, hey, like, our livelihood, our career is all depending on winning this championship, so let's do whatever we can. It doesn't matter. Like, let's do whatever we can to win it.
Right, and the competition's different. And a lot of time you spend talking to your teammates, it's about your assignments. It's about what you're trying to learn. And that's the thing about, too, is you come from Jacksonville. Everybody kind of talks about the difficulty of learning a Vic Fangio system. How has that transition been for you? Is it something, is there material you can bring with you, or is it something you have to learn from the beginning?
Great question. We'll get that answer next after the break. Prince Amukabara, our guest. It's been a fun Bears All Access, brought to you by IGS Energy on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Monday night's game against the Minnesota Vikings is brought to you by Hall of Fame partner Miller Lite, the light beer that's brewed for Bears fans and always brewed for more taste. It's Bears All Access, brought to you by IGS Energy on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Tom Thayer's here. I'm Zach Sabin, Prince Amukabara. Before the last commercial break, Tom was asking about the adjustment to a Vic Fangio defense, and we had Jarrell Freeman on Bears All Access earlier in the season, and he talked about the complexities. It took him nearly a year to kind of figure out exactly what Fangio wants.
And Quentin Dempsey even made mention of the
exactly.
difficult.
It's not just rookies and young players that have to take time to learn how to adjust to what Vic Fangio wants.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. It's like, so just being in the National Football League, for the most part, offense and defenses run the same thing, but the language is just different. So in New York, I probably was speaking English, and now in Chicago, I'm speaking Italian. I just have to learn the language.
It's a romance language, Tom. I mean, you know it.
Because of Fangio.
Right.
Fangio
exactly.
is Italian.
There you go.
That's why I said that. But as a corner, it's very easy because I really don't have to know anything. You could just tell me 1, 2, 3, or 4, or just whatever coverage, and I will know how to play it. However, yes, Coach Vic's defense, it does challenge you to recognize formation, to recognize down and distance, just to be cerebral about where you are on the field, what the situation is, and then you'll get a call. You'll know it to play out of all that. So it just forces you to lock in and always be focused.
So locking away from the noise is what I was going to ask you. So you play in a stadium like Lambeau Field where it's packed. When you're on defense, the crowd is quiet. You can hear Aaron Rodgers. You can hear him go through his cadence. Or you play a home game, the crowd is cheering when you're on the field. Is there a difference to you? Do you like one or the other? Is it easier to communicate with your safeties, linebackers, and other corners if it's a quiet stadium?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I think it's very easy when we're away because the fans are quiet. Because then when we're at home, now we have to use some type of sign language, and now we have to use hand signals or whatever just to communicate what play we're going to be running.
Where have you adjusted as a corner? Because you have your fundamental skill set that you brought with you to the Bears, and then you're trying to learn the Bears' defense in the meantime. And I bring it up because in the Pittsburgh game, your first game of the season, you could see that you were technically sound right away, and they were testing you.
Right. Yeah, I would say just playing off man, just because I usually just love to press in the beginning, and that's just the type of player I am. So playing off man, now I get to read the quarterback. Now I get to get off and see different route combinations, and now I could be more aggressive and possibly jump something. And I feel like that's what gave me an edge in OTAs, in camp, just because I was just using my past experiences and just applying them.
You know, it seemed like in football, the offensive line quarterback and the defensive backs play every down. With you, when you came back into the mix, it's you and Kyle Fuller and Marcus Cooper. Are you okay with that, or are you an? It sounds to me like you're an every down player.
Yeah, and that's what I'm used to. But I mean, wherever you go, you just have to be ready for whatever situation. And the situation is we have three great corners that are playing well, great outside corners that are playing well, and then you're just trying to find a way to get those guys on the field. And yeah, so we don't know what the future is going to look like, whether if two people are going to stay on. But right now, yeah, that's the situation. We're all rotating, so just got to stay ready on the sideline forever.
Are you a flip-flop guy, or do you like to stay on one side of the field?
I think it's the greatest reward as a corner to get the assignment to, hey, go follow their best guy, because now the coaches are telling you, hey, you're our guy, we trust you. However, if you do have somebody else, because if you have a Patrick Peterson and a Richard Sherman or whatever, or if you have Chris Harris and Aqib Talib, you're not really following, just because you say, hey, it doesn't matter, choose your poison, it doesn't matter where you go, both these corners can lock you up. So hopefully that's the case here. Like, hey, we think we have two, three lockdown guys, and there's no point in one guy following one.
Who is the biggest trash-talking receiver that you've gone up against? Because these guys, I feel like the further away you get from the ball, you know, and you played with Odell Beckham Jr., you didn't have to defend him. But,
right.
I mean, they talk a lot. And yeah. And just listening to you with us, I feel like you're not afraid to engage in some conversation with receivers.
it's funny. I've never really had somebody talk stuff to me. I would say it's funny. I think he played here. Eric Weems.
Yeah.
Okay. And it was my rookie year, but he was a gunner in Atlanta. We played in the playoffs, and he was probably the first person to ever say anything to me. And he was making fun of me because I wasn't wearing gloves at the time. But other than that, I've never had a receiver talk to me bad in any way. Yeah, it's just been quiet.
Is that a sign of respect, Tom? Do you think?
I think so.
I hope so.
I think, you know, just keep it quiet, and
I would think
don't
Dez
wake
would,
the beast.
Yeah, exactly. I would think Dez would when I played him, but no, it didn't really. Didn't really say anything.
He saw you on tape. He knew what he was in for. Now, do you talk to – can you sense if a guy's lacking the kind of confidence that you need? Do you take advantage of that verbally?
No, probably not. Probably not verbally. I'm more of a speak when spoken to type of guy, because it's hard to talk if you don't make plays. A guy could talk all he wants, and if he's making plays, I mean, it would be dumb of me to say anything back because – I'm not making plays. Now, if a guy talks to me and I make a play, I might say something back, or I might just give him a stare or a smirk, but nothing too
serious.
Do you
have a dance prepared for your first interception for a touchdown?
I've been thinking of that. I don't know.
I got to say, for giving that, relaxing that rule a little bit, it's kind of boring what I've seen so far.
Right. I know. I felt like guys would have took more advantage of it, but it's still early in the season, so maybe
right.
Maybe the right guys haven't scored yet. I think I'm gonna do something with the crown or something, just because my name is Prince. So I don't know.
Get your invitation to Dancing with the Stars,
exactly, or my invitation to the not the royal wedding, but the Prince William or Prince Charles's house or something.
Oh,
like that.
I like that.
Right?
You know,
the Buckingham Palace. Is that what it is?
Buckingham Palace. Yeah, we're talking to the Bears version of royalty, Prince Amukamara. Hey, it's been a really fun hour. Thank you for joining us. Hope to have you back again later on in the season. For Prince Amukamara and Tom Thayer, I'm Zach Zabeman, saying thanks for listening to Bears All Access, brought to you by IGS Energy on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Thanks for listening to the Chicago Bears Network presentation of Bears All Access. Podcasts are available available on ChicagoBears.com and on iTunes, or download the official Chicago Bears mobile app. Bears All Access has been brought to you by IGS Energy and sponsored by CDW, FanDuel, and PNC.